Good evening, everybody. My name is John, and this is usually Wednesday nights. It's quite a quiet place up here at church. It's usually my Bible study group, and we've been trying to encourage more people to join our group. So I'm really encouraged by the numbers tonight. I don't know when it usually is the point where you actually have to start splitting the group, but I think we might be there. So, yeah, anyway. Now, there is a reason why we're here tonight, and that's because you have responded to a request to come and hear how we as Christians and those who are seeking, how do we actually proclaim Christ in a post-Christian culture? And so I had the opportunity of hearing David speak at Onward last year, and again also at KCC earlier this year at Easter. And I was convicted to... while he was here on sabbatical, to come and speak to us. So I invited David, and the short answer is he said yes, and here we are tonight. So what a great blessing it is to see so many people from the Shire, and even outside of the Shire. I don't know how you got over the border, over Alfords Point and others, but we're glad you're here. Just make sure you check your visas on the way out. So it's a great blessing to have you here, and for many churches as well represented. For a lot of, it's a very ecumenical evening, so... we've got as far as Cronulla Presbyterian all the way through to Moorbank Anglican, so we're all over the place. So it's a great blessing. But how do I introduce the man who's going to speak tonight? Well, firstly, I need to introduce the special woman that he's brought with him, and that's Annabelle, his wife. So she'll be joining us, and we're going to have a quick, just short interview. And I thought, how do I introduce David? Well, maybe I'll let Richard Dawkins introduce David to you. There's a lot of X's in this passage of his book. David Robertson is a self-righteous, narrow-minded, up-his-own something, thick-as-a-pig, something moronic retard. Watch out, David. The Sky Fairy is late for his second coming and will be angry with you. Why is anyone debating with this moron? He doesn't know how to. He has the intellectual capacity of roadkill. This is probably the quieter version of some of the things he said about you. May your something come to life and kiss you. I'm impressed that some of the people here bother to debate this Robertson nincompoop. There's a word you don't hear too often. He is clearly out of his mind and beyond reason and logic. If you do debate him, stop respecting his delusions, however eloquent he puts them. And please approach him with the scorn and contempt that he deserves. So there you go. With that, I invite David and Annabelle up to the stage. Have you ever had a welcome like that?
Yeah, in a few atheist clubs. can I just explain? Those were quotes from people on Richard Dawkins' fan club or website. They weren't from him himself. He did once say that I was very unchristian, to which I replied, isn't that the point? What he was trying to get. But it was my sister, by the way, when she wasn't a Christian, read that first one, and she phoned me up, and she was laughing so much. She said, they've described you to a T. Can I put it on a... she said, can I put it on a T-shirt and wear it? So that's the best thing about that one, though, as well, was complaining about my intellectual capacity. They spelt debating wrong, which is I just thought it was lovely.
Well, thank you so much for both being out here. I've had the delight of actually sharing a meal with these two earlier, thanks to my gorgeous wife who actually put on the meal, and I gave her 24 hours notice that we were having special guests over tonight. So, Annabelle and David, what are you doing here? Why are you in Australia, Annabelle?
Just come with David. Well, I'll let David explain. He's doing a sabbatical, so it was a great opportunity for me to join David on this sabbatical. I work back in the UK, and in just God's amazing providence, my service decided to give me an 3 months unpaid leave, and it was really touch and go whether or not I was going to be able to come. We've got a daughter, a son-in-law, and a granddaughter here, so it's been tremendous just for us to be here and to see them and be with them.
Yeah, and also we were able to come because last year we came out to visit, or I came out to speak at Onward, and when we were coming out, British Airways lost Annabelle's passport. So We threatened to sue them. So they gave us a free ticket so we could come back. The Lord works in mysterious ways.
And so you've got family here. Your daughter and son-in-law live in Nowra.
Yes.
But they're up in Sydney. And you're staying at Simon Manchester's place while he's... And you've caused such a ruckus at his place that he's left and gone overseas.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So you've taken over North Sydney Anglican Church. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We're proper North Sydney people, so we're glad to be down with you peasants. we understand that North Sydney Anglicans are right at the cream and the top, you know. But we're there, and we're loving it.
David, so what? You're part of the Free Church.
Yeah.
This is a free event. I don't think the two are related. Can you explain to us, because there's many Anglicans here, what is the Free Church and what role do you... What state is it in at the moment?
We're a Presbyterian church. We broke away from the Church of Scotland. Free stands for not free of charge, but free, because otherwise we'd be filled with Scottish people. No. It's before you got that in. It stands for free of state control, because we were in a very, very poor state, and until about the year 2000, and I think the Lord has turned things around. We're a growing church. We're a small denomination. We have about 15,000 people. But I don't think we're as healthy as we think we are. And I think we're in the middle of a very sad situation, both church-wise and general society-wise in Scotland. So that maybe summarizes it.
And Annabelle, what are you doing while David's off visiting churches if you're not joining him, and or he's hiding in a corner at Moore College, writing a book? What are you doing?
Hey, well, I had decided before I came that I needed to be productive and doing things. So I actually prayed and asked the Lord that he would open up some avenue where I could, you know, contribute to the community I lived in or wider in Sydney. And so that's actually happened. I help at La Kemba with food distribution on Thursdays. I also am involved in St. Thomas's, so they've asked me to do some kind of pastoral things. I go to the Women's Bible Study. I go to the gym in Crow's Nest. And it's fabulous because I've got to speak to these lovely women. And because I'm a foreigner, I have a lot of... I can say what I want. And people just say, oh, she's Scottish, so I get off with it. Honestly, it's been amazing for me to be here because I go to libraries and find out what's on. So I've joined a local book group. I've joined a knitting group. And I have to say, in all these situations, it's been amazing for me. I feel really renewed because I've had great opportunities to share the gospel, amazing opportunities to share the gospel. And again, I think because of my accent, you know, I've been really direct, and I know a woman from a knitting group is wanting to meet me next week because I challenged her about what is truth. So she's wanting to discuss that further with me. So it's... Yeah, so I'm kept busy. Plus, I like to look after my granddaughter.
And we've put on some nice weather for you today, finally.
Absolutely. It's lovely and warm.
I know I was a bit flippant about some of the comments that had been directed at David early when reading that comment. But, Annabelle, from your point of view, how do you respond to some of the vitriol that's coming David's way? How do you deal with that?
I don't read David's blogs.
That's
the truth.
It's
so
very
generally speaking, I don't read his blogs and I don't read his tweets. And I feel I am there to support David. And obviously we've got the church in St. Peter's. So that's a very significant part of our life. Before we came, I think it was particularly hard. And David's only human. And it was particularly hard, and maybe David can speak a bit about that. So the way I deal with it, I think we just need to talk to each other, but above all, I hope I do that, is remind David about our purpose here and that God knows everything. And if we can stand and lift our hands and say our hands are clean, you know, insofar as we can, then, you know, I'm just praying and supporting David and being alongside him, which I hope I do.
You do.
we do thank you for supporting David, because it enables him to do what he does and encourages all of us. And I think it's a wonderful ministry that he's part of it throughout the world. Actually, he's, you know, your books have really compelled us to actually stand up for Christ and to be discerning about what we read and what we say. So we want to acknowledge that, and we thank you, Annabelle, and your role in all that. So, David, I'm going to, less of me means more of you, so I'm going to let you do the rest of the speaking as we sit down.
Okay.
And we want to, thank you for your time tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, we don't, you know, we're Scottish Presbyterians. We don't do joint pastorates in that sense. But Annabelle and I very much do have a joint ministry in that sense. And also, I would say that we find ourselves, we did find ourselves, I think Annabelle did explain this, so I think I ought to kind of explain it a little bit more. When we came here, I mean, I'm in a lot of battles, you know, and it's very interesting because the worst ones usually actually come from within the church. That's the hardest thing. And we have a big issue just now in Scotland, which you are going to have as well, on the whole transgender stuff. Thank you. I'll take the and I had written a report for our church, which it was a little bit provocative in some ways. Maybe using the phrase state-sponsored child abuse probably wasn't too subtle. But we've got a crazy situation in Scotland just now where the government are proposing that 12-year-olds will be able, without their parents' permission, to change their gender just by signing a form. It's just, I mean, you have no idea how mad this is getting. And I had written this just before we left. The Primus of the Scottish Episcopal Church put out a press release attacking me. And, you know, all the usual stuff. We're for love. These people are Pharisees, full of hate, all that kind of stuff. And the press picked up on it, of course, and they really went for me. So much so that the day that we left, literally the day we flew out of Scotland, I was in every Scottish newspaper and basically being condemned by all the political people and lots of people in the church. And it's really, really hard to get even people in the church to stand up and speak for you. Lots of ordinary Christians and non-Christians, because the non-Christians think this is nuts as well. It's just your elites who think, or maybe they don't even think it, they're just too scared to say otherwise. So it was rough. It was so rough that when we got here, my daughter phoned, and she's at the University of Edinburgh, and some of her lecturers had challenged her. And to me, that's outrageous. You know, I was so glad I wasn't in Scotland, because I would have been round the door, you know, all that Christian love flowing out. But so we came here pretty tired, to be honest. And I have to say this, we've been very, very renewed by being here, and we have absolutely really enjoyed sharing with people. In fact, I'm supposed to be on sabbatical, which people at home think's a holiday, and they're getting horrified at, what, you're speaking at this, and you're doing this, and you're doing that. Well, sabbatical is not about a holiday. Sabbatical is about being renewed, and I've been able to do a bit of writing. Most of all, I think, feel renewed in ministry. And that's really bad news for you guys here, because it means that I feel quite encouraged to say a lot of things. So we'll have to be quite careful what we're going to do. Now, it is a privilege to be in Sutherlandshire. My first charge was in the county of Sutherland, which is in the north of Scotland, and as I'm sure you know in the Shire, it means the Southland. And that's because to the Vikings, it was the South. It's like 200 miles north of Edinburgh, right? So this was the Southland. And I was thinking about that, and I thought, there's a wonderful book called the Orkney Inga Saga, which comes from the 12th century, which was before most of you were born. And it has this great line, which I instantly remembered. I don't memorize things, but this was fantastic. It's this ancient saga, and in a chapter it describes how Christianity came to the Orkney Islands. And two guys called Eric Bloodaxe and Thorfinn Skullsplitter, and that... Those were their names. Any of you guys, by the way, into heavy metal, you are so out of date. This is 12th century, right? So Eric Bloodaxe and Thorfinn Skullsplitter came with their troops, you know, sailed all the way up, and they said to Magnus, the Earl of Orkney, "We are Christians," great names for Christians, "we are Christians, and you'd better become Christian, or we will steal your cattle, burn your houses, rape your women, and kill your children." And that chapter ends, and so all Orkney was baptized. And I thought, this is how you do evangelism. It's a subtle approach. No, that's not. And by the way, if you're not a Christian here and you're thinking, what is this guy on? No. That's in Scotland, that's what we call humor. You can, but that actually is what it said. And, I think it's really, really important for us, if you're going to understand the Orkney English saga, you need to understand the time. I study history and so on. I think it's important for us, if we want to communicate the Christian gospel, to understand the time that we live in. And so what we're going to do is we're going to work through a few things. And I'm going to ask, first of all, in terms of Acts 17 and verse 6, where it said of Paul and his companions, "These men who've turned the world upside down have come here also." At least that's what it said in the King James Version. In the NIV, it says, "These people who've caused trouble all over the world have now come here as well." It tells you everything about my ministry. That is my theme verse for my life, is turning the world upside down. Now, not necessarily causing trouble, although the two often go together. That is what we are looking for. My big concern is that far too many Christians say, we're just going to influence the world a little bit. No, I don't want the world influenced. I want it turned upside down. I think when you see the world as it is, with all the horrors and all the wrong things, you want it turned upside down. That's what Jesus does. And he does it in a very different way. It's not politics. It's not a military revolution. But when the gospel begins to work, it turns the world absolutely upside down. Now, I think the world in Australia, those are the Kelpies in Falkirk in Scotland. I just didn't know what I could put up for Australia. I just thought I'd let you see a wee bit of Scotland. But what kind of world is Australia today? Now, I'm already skating on very thin ice. The last thing you want is some foreigner coming and telling you about your own country. I hate it when people come and do that in Scotland. And it's going to get worse, because when a foreigner comes and tells you about your own church, that's even worse. So I'm going to offer some generalizations and some observations, and we're going to have a Q&A and so on, and I really do want you to push back with this and to help us think through these things, because here's the problem. I don't have an answer to a lot of these questions. I just think about these things all the time. I was once in the United States doing a missions training thing, and afterwards this woman came up to me and she was really, really, really upset. And she said, "Can I talk to you? I'm not very happy." And I said, "Well, you don't look very happy. We'll talk after the next session." "No, now." Well, submissive Christian women who are Americans, you talk to them when they tell you. You do what they say. They kind of have a strange view of submission. So I thought, right, I'll talk to you. Come on, let's get a coffee. We'll go and sit. And she criticized me for what I'd done, which I won't go into. But she said, "My big problem is this. I'm an American, and I believe, we've been brought up to believe that we can do anything. And you basically trashed every suggestion that we had for reaching Europe with the gospel." And I said, "Yeah, but that's nothing to what the devil will do." I said, "Seriously?" She said, "Yes, but it's worse than that." And I said, "Well, what's worse than that?" She said, "When we asked you the answer, you didn't tell us." And I said, "Why do you think I didn't tell you?" And she said, "Well, that's what I'm really upset about. You don't know?" And I said, "Yeah, you've got it. I don't know. I really don't know. But I said, I care enough about it, and I want to do it. And I spend my whole life trying to work out, how do we reach people? How do we reach people?" And we'll come back to that. But in Australia today, I'm going to suggest certain trends that we see in the Western world which I think apply to Australia. I think there are some differences, and we can discuss those later. But what I want to do is I want to show you where this is going. Now, imagine a nation that's as small as Scotland, Ireland, which has a very, very traditional, at least nominally Christian, but actually much more than nominal in many ways, very strong Catholic church. And a few years ago, I think it was the country in the world where the most Catholic priests came from. You know, the idea of Ireland ever changing to the extent that it has, as it did, as was exemplified this past weekend. Ireland's a great example of how quick things can change. Scotland, I think, changed just as quick, or perhaps even quicker. But I'm going to show you a wee video, and excuse the quality of it. I just ripped it off, and you'll see some things, and I want to just talk about it. Okay. Yep. That really upset me this week, and I'll tell you why. It was, of course, the Irish abortion referendum, and what you saw in there was this. Now, let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that you thought abortion was a necessary evil, that it needed to be done to prevent something worse happening. I don't agree with that at all. I think that's a facetious argument. I don't think it works. But supposing you thought that, the referendum is passed, what you would feel is a kind of solemnity about such a major thing. People are dancing on the streets singing "We Are the Champions" because they've been given the right to kill their own children. I'm sorry, but that's out of Dante's Inferno. Do you know the law in the United Kingom? Last year, 11 babies, near to full term, were injected in the heart with a drug that killed them, and then they were born dead because their parents didn't want them born with a cleft lip. That's it. 160 were killed by the same method because their parents didn't want twins. You know, I wrote that on my Facebook page, and I had people immediately writing. One woman wrote very movingly, said, I've got a cleft lip. You know, this is appalling. But if you listen to that very carefully, you wouldn't be able to make it out. You'll hear things like, one step closer. One step closer to what? One step closer. And you know what that's saying? And you have the same disease here. It's the idea that human beings are progressing. And you'll notice what the government minister said. We brought Ireland into the 1950s. What does it mean to come into the 21st century? Well, I'll tell you what it does mean. Some of the things I'm going to show you. But it means if you're an older person, you're ill, you better watch out. Because progressive values, the point what I'm going to say is this, progressive values are not progressive at all. They are regressive. In fact, I refuse to use that term progressive. I always use the term regressive. Hashtag regressive. And because we are regressing to a Greco-Roman pagan view of the world. Now, you go back to first century Mediterranean, and you will find remarkable similarities with where we're going today. Now, I don't want this to be a total discouragement to people. I think you've really got to see. One of the problems I've had in Scotland is I keep trying to tell people what's happening and what's going to happen, and Christians don't want to listen. Or the ones that do want to listen then want to kind of defend Christendom, and they get that wrong, and they focus on maybe one or two issues rather than the whole big picture. But people don't want to know. And I think we do have to know. I think we do have to grasp. Jesus stood outside Jerusalem and his disciples were rejoicing. And he wept over Jerusalem because he saw what was going to happen to Jerusalem. I think it's a mistake for Christians to try and hide away from the reality of what's going on. And I think it's a mistake for you to hide away from the reality of what's even going on in Sydney. Now you say, I can't cope with it. I can't cope with the pain. I mean, I find watching that upsetting. And even talking about injecting a baby in that, you know, it's X-rated stuff. It's horrific. It's horrible. But there's a whole lot worse than that going on. And yet we need to know that great is the darkness that covers the earth, because we need to shine the light into that darkness. And by the way, one of the things that will happen is as we shine the light, the darkness will be exposed and the darkness will react furiously. These people who are chanting and yelling, I know the attitudes. And they're people who have made sometimes the most appalling threats to me personally, but also to others. I'm glad Annabelle doesn't see she doesn't see my mail. I'm really glad she doesn't see it, because some of the hate mail is utterly horrendous. One I quite liked, actually. They said, they wrote me recently and said, and in fact, they didn't just write me personally, they put it on the internet. You know, stay in Australia, you scumbag. I thought, okay, fine, I'll do that. Take away my passport. We can cope. But it's real persecution to be stuck here. Just don't send me to the Shire. That's all I asked. Because that's where they now send the criminal. No. Here's some of the stuff I think's going on. Right, the trends. Secular utopianism. That's where the progression thing comes from. All your politicians want to be seen as progressive. Except one or two, which I won't name, but you can work that out in Australia anyway. But they want to be seen as progressive. We are progressing. There's a secular utopianism. There's a belief. Steven Pinker's got a book out just now called Enlightenment. And he basically says the Enlightenment's brought us everything good. He misses out the bad stuff. And the only thing that's holding us back is religion. So we are progressing. And you know this, if you're going into Sydney to work and you're having your cappuccinos and you go to Bondi Beach at the weekend, you've got, you know, everything seems wonderful. Everything seems great. Everything is fantastic. And, you know, if we can just build, things can only get better. We're just going to build a better world. Everything's going to be better. And it's not. Maybe it's because I'm a Scottish Calvinist, but I used to have a poster that I loved. I had stuck on my wall in university, and it said, things were pretty bad. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. It was a bit longer than this, but things were pretty bad. And they told me to cheer up and smile because things could get worse. So I did cheer up. I did smile, and things did get worse. You know, I think that between those two extremes, the kind of progressive utopianism we're advancing to nirvana, it never, ever happens. But that is the guiding philosophy of our... And that goes, forget your politics. You can be right, left, liberal, whatever. One of the big problems with conservative politicians nowadays is they're no longer conservative, because they're the same progressive. For Theresa May, our conservative prime minister, congratulated the Irish on what they were doing. And she always wants to be seen as progressive. So that means, you know, you've got to go for certain issues on sexuality so that you can show that you're progressive. So that secular utopianism is there. It's a guy called Louis Namia. Not a Christian, French. Those two things don't necessarily go together. Hitler and the Third Reich were the gruesome and incongruous consummation of an age which, as none other, believed in progress and felt it was being achieved. progressive people, if you read Dostoevsky, if you read Nietzsche, if you read what happened in the 20th century in Europe, you'll find that the people who most pushed the most oppressive regimes were those who believed that they were being progressive. And they were getting rid of the elements that would prevent them from progress. I mean, I'm sorry for using Hitler, but that was my area of study. In the 1920s and Germany in the 1930s was the most progressive nation in the world. Scientifically, the most advanced. Academically, brilliant. Socially and so on, the most progressive. We like to think it was a bunch of, you know, right-wing hoodlums that got Hitler into power. No, it wasn't. Most academics belonged to the Nazi party. Some of the leading biologists, some of the leading philosophers. And we go, oh no, of course, it's all wrong, it's all wrong. That's not how things work. It's not how the human heart works. So I think this kind of secular utopianism, it's not Christians who think that we're going to build some kind of utopia on earth. We're far more realistic than most of our politicians and most of our media. Religious fundamentalism, that can be a real problem. Now, it can be a problem on the Christian side as well. And what I mean by that is an unthinking type of Christianity or a kind of sect type of Christianity. Not everything that calls itself Christian is Christian. But the religious fundamentalism that we face most of all is Islamic. Now, you want to be really careful here. Our neighbors back home in Scotland are Muslim, and they're lovely people. When I was in hospital, Mohammed was one of the first people to visit me. I'm quite smart, so I worked out what his religion was. The problem with Islam is, and just to grasp this, our politicians can't grasp it because they're back in the secular utopianism thing. They have to believe that all religions are fundamentally the same. Because that sounds good, doesn't it? And you've got to treat them all the same. But they're not. Because Islam is not just a religion. It's a political system. I have never met a Muslim who does not think of Islam as a political system as well. They don't have any separation of church and state. And that is hugely important to grasp. Now, personally, I think that we should welcome Muslims to our countries. And I think you've got a great opportunity in this country to reach out to Muslims who you wouldn't be able to get anywhere near. So you've got a place like Lakemba and so on, and you can either let it be turned into an Islamic ghetto, or you can pour resources into praying for and seeing. We're seeing in the United Kingdom a huge number of Iranians being converted. Do you know, it's reckoned, I have an Iranian friend who's a free church minister, and he reckons that in the past few years, more than 1 million Iranian Muslims have become Christians. You know, but religious fundamentalism is a real danger in contemporary society. And it's a danger here as well. State fascism. What do I mean by that? I mean, just to put it very simply, we can ask questions about this. Fascism, whether it's Italian form or it's German form, everyone uses the term fascist as a term of insult. But fascism was primarily the control of the state over everything. Now, you can have... We could have called it communism in that sense as well. But here's the problem. In most societies, and including in Australia, Australia was basically Western European and particularly Protestant in its ethos and politics. And that meant this, that Australia was founded upon the basis that you had the state and you had the church. And the two, although they could be connected in different ways, they were fundamentally different. The church did not or should not run the state, and the state shouldn't run the church. But if you remove God out of the equation and you remove the church out of the equation, except when it becomes just kind of a functionary of the state, then what the church provided, the state now provides. So all of a sudden, states are providing morality. Schools are no longer primarily about teaching people the basics of education and how to think, but they're about social engineering and telling people what to think. The big danger you had here, your safe schools program, look, nobody should support bullying of any kind, of any people, whatever sexuality or all the gender confusion that occurs. Nobody should support that. but to put into schools a philosophy which teaches against what humanity is, it's just so incredibly dangerous. And state fascism is when the state says, this is what our values are, and this is what you'd better accept. The British government, for a number of years, have been saying, we want people who come to Britain to accept British values. And I keep asking them, what are British values? And they keep giving me waffle words that could mean anything. And the trouble is, the way that they are now defining them, somebody like me, who's born and bred in the United Kingdom, I'd be excluded because I don't hold what they say are British values. And it's just the values of the elites. It's the values that you've got to accept this. And I think this is happening in Australia, by the way, as well. I'm utterly, utterly amazed at some of the stuff that I've read in the Sydney Morning Herald. In fact, I've had to stop reading it because I just get so upset. It makes me plead imprecations upon the whole establishment. But let me just give you one example that I've observed while I was here. To me, this was astounding. One of the universities in Sydney has a committee which consists of two students and two members of staff. And they have to investigate sexual abuses. But they don't define what sexual abuse is. So a lot of the international students are terrified because they could lose their visas, they have to go home. And somebody giving someone a kiss on the cheek. Well, that's the French going, isn't it? You know, and there's a whole range of different things. So they're really, really scared. But the most terrifying thing that I read was the rules of this committee state explicitly that the normal rules of evidence do not apply. That's in their constitution. And what that means is this. It's not that the person is innocent until proven guilty. It's you're guilty until proven innocent. And this small committee can determine, and although it has no legal force, they can throw you out. That, to me, that's like Chairman Mao's, you know, little red brigades. It's just appalling. But that is what will happen in our culture. Now, please don't think of this in terms of Christian persecution. I don't want Christians getting a persecution complex. You have to think of a much wider picture of the whole society and the whole community. When you have, as I have had, business people and lawyers and academics write you, or doctors, and say, this is what I think, this is what I've seen, but you can never say this and you can never use my name because I could lose my job. That's appalling. That's a danger. Consumerist dumbed-down materialism. That's everywhere in the Western world. There's a book called Affluenza. Not a Christian book. It's full of lots of bad language. Looks at various cities, including Sydney, in the Western world. And you're one of the most consumerist cities in the Western world. Now, here's the problem, you see. I have a slight problem with Christians who get really wound up about sex and sexuality, and they don't get really wound up about materialism. And the dumbed-down materialism that is there. Now, this is not a plea for a particular type of politics, nor is it a plea for a particular type of poverty. But it is saying this. If your God is your belly, you cannot serve both God and mammon. Jesus said that. You can't do that. And we need to think very, very carefully about what we're offering to people. And one of the worst things that's ever happened to the Christian church is something that has come not out of Africa, but has been exported to Africa from the West. And that is the prosperity gospel that says, if you follow Jesus, you'll be made wealthy. That's not what Jesus says. Now, God may prosper you and God may bless you. And there may be so many different things that happen. But this materialism that is in our culture. We are in North Sydney, and I know I've joked about it, but one of the things that St. Thomas's are asking is, what are the needs in our area that we reach out to? There's not a whole lot of refugees. There's not a whole lot of poverty. There's not a whole lot of things that, you know, it's easy to have a soup kitchen. And somebody pointed out something, I think my wife had said it as well, loneliness. There's an awful lot of really lonely people. They may be rich, but they are just really, really lonely. And I think that's part of where our culture's at. New Age paganism. Not everyone's consumerist and materialist. Even here, I've gone into bookshops here and I'm just amazed at how many in the religious section, it is paganism. And paganism works so well because it allows us in terms of the sex and sexuality, it's green, worshipping Mother Earth and so on, and you can be so cool. My favorite part of Sydney, I do apologize for anyone who's not from there, is Newtown. I love Newtown. As soon as I got off Newtown train and started walking up to Moore College and smelt the cannabis, I thought, I'm home. If I just walk past this shop, I'll just get naturally high without ever having to. But the coffee in Newtown is great. And I've actually come down. I've made a decision on the big debate in Australia. Melbourne, Sydney, who has the best coffee? The answer is Sydney because of Newtown. And it's great. I love it. And I love all the quirkiness. And but all the things, you can see it there all as well. But so much of it is just, it's people trying to be different, people looking for answers and coming up with answers that they think are cool and trendy and new. And I could go back 2,000 years and give you exactly the same answers. By the way, you think same-sex marriage is new. I was reading, I think it was in Augustine. If it wasn't, it was in one of the early church fathers. Utterly amazed where they spoke of the Persians who marry their mothers and the Celts who marry their brothers. So even same-sex marriage, there's nothing new under the sun. But New Age paganism, that's where a lot of our culture is going in terms of spirituality. Sexual confusion and dysfunctional families. I don't want to say a huge deal about this. Feel free to ask about it. But it is a key thing. In the beginning, God made humanity, and he made us male and female. And he made us equally in his image, male and female, which is why you should not and cannot have or must not have misogyny within the Christian church in the same way as you shouldn't have racism. Both of them are absolute sins. But the sexual confusion that's happening just now is not only in terms of sexuality, not only in terms of transgender, because there is a genuine psychological condition where people do need help. And again, we shouldn't despise or turn away from people who struggle with that. 30 years ago, I had a transgender woman in my congregation. I'll tell you the story another time. It was just absolutely amazing that God was preparing us. But now what's happening is this. Because of something that's called queer theory, your kids are going to be taught that there is no such thing as gender. That when my daughter has a baby, that baby will be assigned a gender at birth. As though the nurse takes the baby and goes, I think we'll make this one a male, or this one a female. Or maybe we better not, because there's another 77 genders. So let them choose when they get older. And most people are looking and going, what are you talking about? Don't be so daft. It's a boy. How do you know it's a boy? I'm sorry, I grew up on a farm. If you didn't know that, you shouldn't be having children. Seriously, but intelligent people are going, I was assigned male. No, you weren't. You have male chromosomes. You are male in the womb and you're male outside the womb, and you may now feel that you're female. Well, that's something that needs to be dealt with and helped with, but you don't get to choose your gender. And the chaos that this is creating. I just got word this week that our local primary school in Dundee has been awarded an LGBTIQA, there's 26 letters, but award for being friendly in that way. And teaching six-year-olds with posters on the wall saying, respect other people's pronouns. I'd be so impressed if kids in Scotland at six could know what a pronoun was. Most of the adults here don't know what a pronoun is. It's crazy, and it's causing dysfunctionality. Well, what do you care? I argued against the same-sex marriage thing, not to protect the church. That was ridiculous. And nor to save Christendom. I'll tell you why I argue against same-sex marriage. Because the people affected the most, the dysfunction of marriage, is the poor. Because the late 1960s, bourgeois sexual morality of the upper middle class has resulted in the fact that if I take a bunch of kids from a housing scheme in Dundee, and there's 20 of them, I can't say to them, go home to your mum and dad, because 19 out of the 20 won't have a mum and dad at home. And the harm that that causes is devastating. So that's what's going on, I think, in our culture. That is equality. Here's the paradox. The more our society talks about equality, the more unequal we become. Why? Because we've managed to make equality about sex and sexuality. In Scotland, the Equality Network is solely about that. And not about more important things, such as finance. I'm not sure if I believe the statistic, but I did read it in both the newspapers that I read, that one in six children at some point this year in Australia will go hungry. I'm sorry, that's insane. You are a really wealthy country. But there are growing gaps. inequality, and that's a big problem. The church. Let me just say something about the church and where we're at with this and how we're going to come back and do Q&A about what we can do in terms of things. I think the answer to all of this, by the way, is not to campaign politically against lots of different things. Christians should be involved in politics. But what our society needs is the gospel. And what people need is Jesus Christ. Give me a working class housing estate or give me an area with a whole bunch of drug addicts. Have six people in that area who are truly converted to Jesus Christ. It will turn that area upside down and be worth more than many, many million dollars of aid. People need the gospel. By the way, can I just say this? Don't patronize poor people by thinking that you're going doing outreach in a poor area when you just do a soup kitchen. Soup kitchens may be important. But the thing that the poor need as much as the wealthy, maybe the wealthy need it even more, it's just the gospel. The good news of Jesus Christ. Let me say something about the church. I'll make some observations just about here in Sydney. You are, we are 10 years ahead of you, if you like, in regression, if that makes sense. You are not nearly as bad as we are. Not nearly. And I think there's three reasons for that. There may be others. I'll observe three. One is the Billy Graham Crusade in 1959 had a very long-lasting impact. And the number of people who were converted through that and the ripple effect that occurred with that is really quite astounding. I know that the Billy Graham organization consider their 1959 Australia campaign probably to be the most successful ever. I do think that had a fantastic, long-lasting impact. Second is more college. Other colleges are available as well, but Moore College has had a phenomenal impact on this city and this area. And please do pray for that to continue. Actually having Christian workers who believe the gospel and who believe the Bible is wonderful. Believe it or not, we have loads of churches where people who don't believe the Bible. So I think Moore College has been hugely significant. And I think a third thing that you have that we don't have to the same extent, at least in Scotland, is immigrants. And I know sometimes people go, oh, we want to protect Christian Australia. No, you don't. When people say that, they usually mean they want to protect white Australia. And that's a different thing. I think there's a fantastic opportunity because of the number of Chinese, because the Chinese I found are just so, the most incredibly open people to the gospel. But also others as well. And I do think that those three factors are a huge part of the difference. However, there are problems because strengths can be weaknesses. You have some fantastic youth work, but my big concern is, what about your 25 to 40 year olds? Are you really training your young people and bringing up your young people to deal with the world as it is, or are they cocooned in church youth groups and a church environment, which when they go out into the wider world, they really don't know how to handle things? They really don't know. My daughter, Becky, who's in Nowra, I wanted to have a wee chat with her. And I said, before she went off to university, I said, Becky, we need to have the talk. And she looked at me and she said, Dad, I had the talk when I was about 9 with Mum. I said, no, not that one. Another talk. We're not going to have that talk. We're going to have another one. And she said, well, I said, look, you're going to be going to university and there's a lot of temptations and you're a Christian. And she just looked at me and shook her head as only she can do. Because she's pretty well one of the few people in the world who can pretty well always beat me in an argument. And none of you, and especially Annabelle, don't ever tell her I said that. I'm terrified of my daughter. We're having a father and daughter day tomorrow, and I'm just going to be up all night praying and fasting. But she's pretty smart, and I love her a bit. And she just looked at me, and she shook her head as though I was mad. And she said, Dad, I survived 6 years in Morgan Academy, which is our local secondary school that she went to, where four of her class said they were bisexual, where there was all kinds of stuff. She said, do you not think, and the minute she said it, I just looked at myself and thought, you idiot. I said, yeah, of course, you're going to be fine. Because in university, you can find Christian friends, you've been through a really tough. Now, maybe we don't want our kids to go through stuff like that. But at some point, if they're not going to be in that situation, you are going to have to find a way to let them see what's really going on in the world. And above all, you're going to have to let them question. Because I was up at Katoomba with some of your young people, and they were great. I absolutely loved them. But I know that some of those young people either did or would have, if they could have, voted yes in the same-sex marriage referendum. Because the only message they heard was, vote no, because the church says so. They didn't understand everything that was involved. And they were hearing the world say from another side, it seemed fairer and nicer. We've got to go far deeper into things with that. So I think there's a problem there. I think human sinfulness, we've all got that and all the different things. And I think that's a difficulty. Tribalism and other stuff like that. And I do think that we struggle with answering. Now, I met a young man here, I won't point him out, but he's doing something with apologetics. I thought, that's great. I don't like the term apologetics, but being ready to answer for your faith is really important. But this is the question. What do you do when, as you bear witness to Jesus Christ, people start firing in questions and things? Do you know what to say? Do you have someone you can take them to? Do you know books on particular subjects? There's a whole range of things, and all of us have got to educate ourselves. And then I just want to finish the talk with a couple of things. It's kind of a real passion. Now, what can I say about, again, just about the church? We have absolutely adored being in different churches here. We have to be very careful. You do some really weird stuff, by the way. So when we first came here, we thought, what is this? You know, like all the Anglican churches. And then we thought, even the Presbys have gone this way. See, I'm learning Australian word, Presbyterian, but it's Presbys. Or Presbys, even the Presbys have gone this way. The Angies and the Presbys. you know, you've got the 8 o'clock and the 10 o'clock and the 5 o'clock. And meeting people who say, I belong to the 10 o'clock. And I'm going, what kind of cult is that? you know. Because I'm not sure I read that in my Bible, you know. I am of Paul, I am of Apollos, and I am of the 10 o'clock. and I thought, no, animals very wise. We said, now, let's not judge, because we thought, you know, we're hardcore Christians. We go to church twice on a Sunday, different sermons. And I said, let's not judge. And I understand why and all the different stuff that goes on with that. So you've got some strange stuff, but brilliant stuff. We love, in fact, we like it so much that we do go to the 10 o'clock and the 5 o'clock in St. Thomas's. We just can't quite make the 8 o'clock. That seems too much. But we're not that sanctified. But and so many good people and so many good preachers and some rubbish preachers and so much good worship and rubbish worship and all the other stuff that goes on. But your church will die or decline within 10 years unless there is renewal. The church is the one thing that constantly needs renewal. Please don't go to our level. It's too late for us without a major revival. It is too late for us. God in his mercy could turn it completely around, and that would be, you know, it would be like Pentecost. And we'll need another Pentecost in Scotland now. But you at the moment are not at that stage. Don't try and fight and save Christendom. What you need in Sydney is more people who are Christians, of whatever background. So the key factor is not how can I fill my church? Because I can tell you how you can fill your church. You can just compete with the other churches, people who want to go to church. But the key factor is how do we reach the people in this community? And I'm going to mention two things here, two passages of scripture that Ezekiel 43 is just a great one for me. The man brought me to the gate facing east, and I saw the glory of the God of Israel coming from the east. His voice was like the roar of rushing waters, and the land was radiant with his glory. The vision I saw was like the vision I had seen when he came to destroy the city, and like the visions I'd seen by the Kibar River, and I fell face down. The glory of the Lord entered the temple through the gate facing east. Then the Spirit lifted me up and brought me into the inner court, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. You will never have any difficulty in evangelism if the glory of the Lord fills the temple. Your biggest need in every single one of your churches, biggest need in my church, is to experience and know the glory of the Lord. Now, I've heard arguments a lot about we're not coming into the presence of God. We're always in the presence of God. Well, good for you. I'm not always in the presence of God. I know that God is always with me. I know that God is always there. But I am not always in meetings or individually knowing the glory of the Lord. I'll tell you what the glory of the Lord is in a public gathering. It's when it's so evident that when a non-Christian comes in, they say, truly God is amongst you. I want non-Christians to be able to come into this building, whatever building you're from, and to, the one thing they cannot say is, this is fake, This is dead. This is boring. This is unreal. They may walk out and say, these people are crazy. They may walk out, I'm never coming here again. It's way too dangerous. Could really muck my life around. But we need to know the glory of the Lord. And I think we should seek that. And I think that is something that is really, really important. Who are your best evangelists? Always. Your best evangelists are, normally anyway, are people who've just become Christians. Because they've experienced and seen for themselves. The trouble is, far too many of us, our testimony is way back when. 1959, when Billy Graham was here. And we need to be able to tell people about what God is doing now in our lives. Genuine and really. And then this one. Yes, Lord, walking in the way of your laws, we wait for you. Your name and renown are the desire of our hearts. My soul yearns for you in the night. In the morning, my spirit longs for you. When your judgments come upon the earth, the people of the world learn righteousness. But when grace is shown to the wicked, they do not learn righteousness. Even in the land of uprightness, they go on doing evil and do not regard the majesty of the Lord. Lord, your hand is lifted high, but they do not see it. Let them see your zeal for your people and be put to shame. Let the fire reserved for your enemies consume them. My spirit longs for you. My soul yearns for you. I'll tell you why I was really upset about the Irish thing. And I couldn't believe how upset I was about it. It's because the Irish are very close to the Scots. And I just saw people shaking their fist at God. One of the old Covenanters in Scotland was in prison. He was about to be tortured. And he was told, why don't you just let it be. Let it go. God will be glorified in heaven. And the old Covenanter turned and said to his tormentors, but I want him glorified on earth. That's why we need to think very carefully. The psalmist says, rivers of tears pour down from my face because your law is not obeyed. You shouldn't feel angry. Or that shouldn't be your primary emotion. I'm not saying you shouldn't feel angry. I'm saying it shouldn't be your primary emotion. Or certainly not hatred. All the bad things that are happening in the world around and even in this city. You know what should really gut you is God is being mocked. And that should break your heart. Because you love the Lord and you love the Lord Jesus and he died for you. And I think if we have that passion, my spirit longs for you, you will see an enormous change. Now, we're going to take a break. And, you know, I was going to say it's a bit heavy. It's not a bit heavy. It's just basic, I think, at one level. And we're going to have a wee break and then take time to compose ourselves, come back. If you've got any questions or comments, I want us to talk about how we reach this city, how we communicate this glorious gospel and how Jesus can be glorified in this city through thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people being brought to know him. So we'll take a break for how long?
15
minutes. Take a break for 15 minutes.